It's 1927, and poised on an airfield in Brooklyn, New York, is one of the great pioneers, the forefathers of American aviation. Of course, I'm speaking about no one other than Charles A. Levine.
What's in a name? Well, if it's Charles A. Lindbergh, plenty. If it's Charles A. Levine, not so much. Lindbergh was, of course, the first pilot to cross the Atlantic. Levine was the first passenger. So why did history remember one Charles but forget the other? Anti-Semitism might have had something to do with it. Henry Sapoznik is here with a story about two airplanes, two songs, and two men named Charles.
Levine, whose parents had emigrated from Poland, had made his fortune selling war munitions wholesale. His big thing was airplanes, and he purchased an airplane from an amazing Italian immigrant named Giuseppe Balanca. The plane had recently made a successful endurance flight for more than the hours would have been needed to fly from New York to Paris. Over the course of planning for his flight, Levine was hiring and firing so many pilots he needed to have installed a revolving door in his office. One of the people who heard about this was Charles Lindbergh, and he approached Levine in his New York offices and asked to be the pilot of the plane. Levine, sensing Lindbergh's neediness, decided to treat him with disdain and basically said, well, I may hire you, I may not. You might be the pilot, you might not. And Lindbergh was so offended that he dropped the negotiations and went to an airplane builder to have them fashion something which would emulate the Balanca. One of the pilots was so incensed that he sued Levine. A court injunction then kept the plane stuck on the ground while Charles Lindbergh was then free to fly into Paris and the pages of history. Eventually, Levine ran out of suitable pilots for his plane and ended up lucking out with a corn-fed, Davenport, Iowa-born pilot named Clarence Chamberlain, who became really the man of the hour and made possible Levine's dream to fly across the Atlantic. There on the field, 2 weeks after Lindbergh, Chamberlain was revving up the plane when Levine at the last moment slipped in and became the first transatlantic passenger when the plane made it just this side of Berlin. The great thing about the excitement of this flight was that American popular entertainment and culture was incredibly taken with this. Newsreels, newspapers, and not the least of which sound recordings. One of the recordings by a performer named Vernon Dalhart honored both of the pilots. Chamberlain and Lindy, our hats are off to you.
Chamberlain and Lindy, our hats are off to you. You're the kind of Yankees that win. One to Paris, one to Berlin, you made it.
It's basically a song that conflates the Aryan Chamberlain and Lindy, the kind of Yankees who always win, as the chorus say, leaving out conveniently the co-pilot or passenger, Charles A. Levine. Even though the mainstream recording companies only recorded songs about Lindbergh, ethnic Yiddish performers wrote songs about the Levine flight. Maybe the best one is a song that was co-written by a man named Sam Coslow. He wrote this really odd song, which has a Yiddish opening and an English section in the middle. The Yiddish verses were steeped in an almost kind of mythological, they say, great heroes of old, our great patriarchs of old, did wonderful things, but yet in our generation, we too have a great hero. So he is compared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob of the Bible.
Levine, Levine, bis der Held jetzt bin ich froh.
Oddly, the English section has nothing to do with the Yiddish section, and in fact makes use of stereotypes about Jews that were popular in vaudeville at the time. But it was stuff like this that would appeal to a crossover audience that really liked Jew comedy, as was seen on the vaudeville stage. So this is a record that was made for two different audiences, Jewish and not so Jewish, all in one piece. And that really, in a way, that's what the makeup of the flight. It had Chamberlain, the non-Jew, and Levine, the deep dish Jew. And so the song really reflected both of their backgrounds.
Levine, you're the greatest Hebrew ace. We got a thrill when Chamberlain flew, but you were right there too. We're proud of you, Levine. Levine, just an ordinary name, but you brought it everlasting fame. We welcome you home from over the foam, Levine, with your flying machine.
The weird thing about this story is we know the ending. We know that Lindbergh eventually became an America Firster, an isolationist who was a major endorser of what was going on in Germany in the few years after that flight. One of the ironic interactions which Lindbergh had was on his return to the United States, his victory lap that he took across the country, he and the Spirit of St. Louis. One of their stops was in Detroit, and one of the people he met there was industrialist Henry Ford. And Lindbergh gave Henry Ford a flight. The thing to keep in mind, that 1927 was not just a triumph year for Lindbergh making the flight, it was also a major defeat for Henry Ford, who had recently lost a slander case about his anti-Semitic racist publication, The Dearborn Independent. So here were two men who had just had some weird interactions with a member of the Mosaic persuasion. Lindbergh having been thwarted in his efforts to get the plane that he wanted, and Ford was being forced to quit the publication of his newspaper. Both of them became big advocates of what was happening in Nazi Germany. Is it possible that this few-minute flight that the two men had solidified their anti-Semitism? I like to think so.
In Bruch ist und Tull wünscht dir dein Jesrul, Levine mit dein flying machine.
Henry Sapoznik is the director of the Mehrend Institute for Yiddish Culture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The historic audio comes from the Mills Music Library and John Fabke at the Center for Popular Music at Middle Tennessee State University.